Welcome to the Functional Medicine Podcast with Dr. McMinn and Coach Lindsay. We're coming to you from McMinn Clinic in Birmingham, Alabama, where Dr. McMinn is an integrative and functional MD, and Lindsay Matthews is a registered nurse and IIN certified health coach. In this podcast, we'll be discussing the latest information on a wide range of topics in the field of functional medicine, which looks for the root cause of disease, and integrative medicine, which incorporates both conventional and alternative therapies. Our overall goal is to help you be the best that you can be in mind, body, and spirit. The following discussion is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease. Please do not apply any of this information without approval from your personal doctor. And now, on to the show with Dr. McMinn and Coach Lindsay.
And welcome back to the Functional Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jim McMinn, and we're honored to have you with us today. I'm here with my co-host, health coach, and BFF, the one and only Nurse Lindsay Matthews.
Thanks, Dr. McMinn. Welcome back, listeners. We're excited to be with you today. And before we get going, we'd like to ask you a favor. Please head over to iTunes and leave us a review and some comments. Those really do help us get the word out and grow our show. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast itself. Thanks in advance. We really do appreciate it.
All right, Coach, now you're too young to remember this, but when I was a younger man growing up, there was this guy on TV by the name of Johnny Carson, who was the host of The Tonight Show. You remember that, Lindsay? Did you?
I remember the name only.
Okay, right.
Not experience.
His before all these new guys. Anyway, he frequently did this thing called the Top 10 Countdown of various items. So today, we're going to a Top 10 Countdown, Johnny Carson style, of the Top 10 Concerns of Women.
Ooh, Dr. McMinn, interesting. I'm excited to hear that. And you know what I think is also really interesting about this podcast is it really truly comes from experience.
It does, absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, I'll give you some forewarning. This is going to be a little bit long podcast, so you might have to break it up into a couple segments here, but that's okay. We got a lot to talk about here. But in our clinic, Lindsay, you know, we're happy to see men and women. But as it turns out, we're probably 80% women, and I really have learned to love dealing with women's concerns because in most instances, we can have a really significant positive impact on their lives. Also, Coach, it's my perspective. My humble perspective, and others would disagree with me, but in modern medicine, I think in many regards, we have failed women when it comes to addressing their health care concerns. And let me take a moment here to pay my heartfelt respect for all the fine healthcare providers who go to work every day to help their patients, including women. But I think the science, you know, I think sometimes, for instance, if you look at studies, a lot of times we don't even have women in the study group.
Right.
You know, so the science, the training, the system is often stacked against women. And providers are not given the time they need to truly listen to women's concerns, which are sometimes more complicated. Like, for instance, I have an OBGYN friend who sees 50 patients a day. So you can imagine if a woman comes in and she's got, you know, hot flashes, night sweats, brain fog, vaginal dryness, she does not have time to deal with that, right?
No.
So the woman probably gets an antidepressant pill and you're on your way. And I think sometimes we often don't take their concerns seriously. And so our therapeutic options are often also too limited. And I think they're biased in the direction of big pharma and surgery, while ignoring other potentially powerful, effective therapeutic options, such as nutrition. And this failure applies especially to menopausal women, but also includes younger women, for instance, with areas like PCOS, endometriosis, sexual health issues, and other such concerns.
I think you're right. I think it's a systemic issue, not necessarily the physicians in the area. You know, they're doing their best with the tools they've been given and the knowledge that they've been taught, even in med school.
Right.
But then I think, too, even as a patient, a lot of times we have this consumer mindset. And I think that adds to the whole problem of the system because people aren't ready to actively engage in a more root cause approach.
Yeah, and I think medicine has become somewhat reductionistic. You know, we go to school, learn all this stuff, like, you know, Krebs cycle, whatever, but it boils down to symptom pill, symptom pill, symptom pill.
Right.
You know, people come in, you got depression, here's your Prozac, you got a UTI, here's your Bactrim. And so women come in with their concerns and they walk out on an antidepressant pill, an anxiety pill, a hot flash pill, and, you know, whatever. But we sometimes, you know, don't take the time to ask, well, why do they have that problem? And if you do that and get down to underlying root cause and you reach into your integrative toolbox with hormones and stuff like that, that, you can always you can often get them fixed up without all those pills, which have right. their inherent side effects. And ultimately, even from the cost effective point of view, I think that functional approach takes a lot more time on the front end, but it's going to be a lot more cost effective on the back end because they're not going to be on these meds for
right.
years and years, if not a lifetime.
Right.
So, okay, Coach, without further ado, let's get going. I'll let you start with concern number 10, and here's a drum roll for you.
Perfect. Here we go. The 10th most common complaint we hear from our female patients is brain fog. So this can range anywhere from where did I put my keys, why did I walk in this room, to am I actually getting early Alzheimer's?
And, Lindsay, brain fog can be due to lots of different factors, such as hormone decline, poor sleep, both quantity and quality, low thyroid, stress, depression, ADD, poor hydration, lack of exercise, inflammation, nutritional deficiencies, poor diet, and autoimmune disorders such as MS and trauma, physical, psychological, emotional, and sexual. And, of course, the PTSD that results from these traumas.
And other causes of brain fog could also include chronic infections, Lyme disease, toxins, mold exposure, histamine issues like mast cell activation, or blood sugar problems, food allergies, other allergies in general, prescription drug effects, side effects, chemo brain, illicit drug use, alcohol, gut problems, including poor digestion, poor absorption, and then celiac disease or even non-celiac gluten sensitivity, altered gut microbiomes, such as SIBO, or yeast overgrowth. So a lot of other issues too.
And for those who are newbies to the program, of course, SIBO stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth.
Yes.
But brain fog can also be secondary to failure of other organs. So for instance, if somebody has heart failure, then they're not getting the blood flow they need to the brain. Also, for instance, another example would be liver failure. People who have that often have high serum ammonia levels, which causes brain fog. So like I keep saying, Coach, it's all connected, isn't it? Yes.
Absolutely.
And we also see sometimes brain fog is associated with other disease states such as chronic fatigue syndrome. Fatigue has many friends, including brain fog, right?
Right. And then also more recently, too, brain fog connected with symptoms of post-COVID syndrome. And there could be many possible reasons for that, but neuroinflammation is probably one of the most likely causes there of brain fog after viruses.
You know, Lindsay, a lot of women, when they come to see me, they're concerned that they're starting to get Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia. And we want to be careful not to dismiss these women and their concerns because every now and then that can be the case. But the vast majority of the time, it's not. We have to give that serious consideration and appropriate workup when needed. If you want to learn more about that, we did a podcast on brain health. If you look at podcast number 12 with the wonderful Dr. Locken, you'll hear more about that.
Yes. So this topic alone, of course, could be an entire lengthy podcast, right, Dr. McMahon? Brain fog.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to keep plowing ahead on our top 10 countdown. And so we won't get too bogged down here in all the therapeutic details of this particular issue. So let's just summarize brain fog by saying it's a serious concern for many women, and it requires that root cause analysis and a comprehensive, customized approach for each individual woman.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Lindsay. I've had women who come in and they're CEO or attorneys or doctors, and they said, Gemma, you can hardly do my job anymore because of the brain fog. It gets pretty thick sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the good news is that the vast majority of these women find that the brain fog goes away or gets significantly better with a customized program addressing some of the root cause issues, as mentioned above.
So then, Dr. McMahon, what's number 9?
All right, Coach, counting down here. Number 9 is mood swings, and this would include things like irritability or feeling overly emotional at times.
You know, I can definitely speak from my own experience as a woman and from my women friends that, and many of the women patients that I've dealt with, this can be a real issue. So some of the most common causes that can cause it are hormonal imbalance, stress, sleep deprivation, neurotransmitter imbalance, and for so many women, just circumstances in life can cause a roller coaster of emotions. Mm-hmm. So real issue.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, over the years, Lindsay, after dealing with women's hormones, I have also found there's kind of what I call a yin-yang to hormones when it comes to mood. So women's emotions are often controlled almost like a puppet on a string by their hormones. And these women often know kind of real time I'm being irritable with my kids or my partner or at work, but they just can't stop. They're almost like they're driven by this hormone imbalance.
Yes. And then, you know, to make it even worse, you can have, as a younger woman, when you experience that, it's like deja vu every month. Mm-hmm. You're like, here comes that irrational, crazy feeling. And then for older women who are, you know, maybe going through that, the change with perimenopause or menopause, it can just be all the time constant. So estrogen is that more yang hormone, and it's important for thinking, mentation, emotions, and arousal. And then on the other end, we have progesterone, the yin, the soothing hormone, often termed women's natural Valium. So at the end of the cycle, when women get relatively estrogen dominant during that PMS time in the cycle, they may find that their emotions and moods are harder to control at that time.
Yeah, Coach, it's also kind of interesting. After a woman has a hysterectomy, the traditional thinking, and I think what we're taught in school, is that they only need estrogen. They don't need progesterone. Mm-hmm. And it's true, they don't need progesterone to protect their uterus, but the brain is loaded with hormone receptors, including progesterone receptors. So these women on estrogen alone often experience hormone imbalance in the direction of what we call estrogen dominance, and this makes them overly emotional. Adding a bit of progesterone to their regimen can really help bring about a balance and improve their emotional state. I had a lady just recently who said that progesterone was just, and this was her word, magical, end quote, for her. So that was really cool for me to hear that.
Yeah. Yes. That's so encouraging. So then moving on to number 8 in our countdown, anxiety and depression. So historically in modern medicine, we've treated anxiety as like a Xanax deficiency and depression as not enough Prozac, but in fact, about a quarter of the older women in America are actually on antidepressant medications, which just blows my mind, Dr. Mm-hmm. Raymond.
Isn't that amazing, Linda? Mm-hmm. A quarter of women in America. That is, mm-hmm. as you say, mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But let me be clear. There is a time and a place for treating these conditions with drugs. And if you're on drugs, there's nothing to be guilty
about
there. But
absolutely.
And they can be life-saving and helpful. And certainly they're in my toolbox as well. However, we should also expand our toolbox beyond these drugs. For instance, let me share with you a case history of a 50-year-old woman, a true story, who came to see us with the main complaint of a pretty severe depression. She had tried just about every antidepressant on the market. Not only did she not have good success with these drugs, but she also had many of the unpleasant side effects.
So got her on a healthy diet, worked on her gut, balanced out her hormones, optimized that thyroid, got her sleeping better, got her energy back, got exercise into the picture, and recommended some specific targeted nutritionals. And lo and behold, she was able to get off of her antidepressants and is feeling fantastic.
Isn't that wonderful, Lindsay? Yeah,
yes.
for sure. Now, that's just one patient, but it does illustrate the power of a functional approach and to what we call lifestyle medicine, which should be added to our therapeutic toolbox for treating anxiety and depression. We should be thinking about the root cause of depression and treating at that level and using pharmaceuticals only when needed. We tend to be too quick to get out the prescription pad and write for these drugs without ever looking for the underlying root cause or considering other therapeutic options.
Right. So moving right along, listeners, back to our countdown. Number 7 in our list of the top 10 concerns for women is headaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Lindsay, I was an ER doc for 20 years, and I saw, oh my gosh, thousands of people who came into the ER with headaches. And I think that, like some diseases, they tend to pick on women more than men, but that's all right. But I learned to kind of split these into two groups, what I call benign headaches and emergent headaches, which I also call killer headaches.
So benign headaches could include things like migraines, tension headaches, sinus headaches, and cluster headaches. And they're not benign in nature of how they feel. So the patient may feel like she's going to die, and they can really hurt. But in the long run, they won't kill you.
Yeah.
So for instance, a woman can have that terrible headache, may have to skip work, be holed up in a dark room with a washcloth over her eyes, totally incapacitated until that migraine lifts, but she can't take care of herself, much less take care of her kids. So it's still a very serious issue.
Yeah, and they can really interfere with her life. So they definitely need to be taken seriously and dealt with, even though we do call them benign headaches.
Right.
But the killer headaches now, they can take you out, and they can take you out pretty fast. These would include things like strokes or like brain bleeds, and then also a meningitis, which is more of an infection in the brain. Brain tumors can also be classified in the killer headache category, but they tend to come on more gradually and are not as acutely emergent.
So I imagine, Dr. McMahon, in the ER, it must have been pretty difficult to determine, you know, is this benign or is this a killer? Migraines can sometimes look and feel exactly like a stroke. So we want to be unequivocally clear here to our listeners. If there's any doubt, call your doctor or go to the ER and get checked out. Don't dismiss it.
Yeah, you're right, Lindsay. It's really interesting. There are some amazing what I call migraine variants, which for all practical purposes can look exactly like a stroke. You know, people can have, numbness or weakness in their arm or whatever. It's just right. It's just amazing. So you do always have to have your radar screen up and always take these seriously. But in my years in the ER, after taking a history on these patients, it became clear to me that for the women, the headaches were often associated with a hormonal change. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was ever taught this, but after years and years and years and treating all these women, you often ask them, well, when did the headache start? And they'd say, well, doctor, when I had my first period, or when I ovulate, or when I have my cycle, or when I went through menopause, I started getting headaches. So it came clear to me that these were definitely hormonal related. Once we establish it's a benign headache, then it's helpful to consider the root cause, such as the hormone imbalance. And sometimes if you deal with these root causes, you can get pretty complete relief with these people.
Right, right. So moving on then to number 6, the top concern for women as hair loss. So as a woman, I can tell you that that's a big deal for us ladies.
Yeah, Coach, I must admit, I was in medical school or residency or whatever, you never really learn much about it.
Right.
I don't know, when you're talking about things like killer headaches or whatever, I mean, it seems like hair is sort of a superficial, no big deal thing. But I think I learned early on, once I got into integrative functional medicine, that it's a huge deal for women.
Right.
For so many years, it's really been an important part of her identity. And the loss of hair may seem like a real crisis to her.
Absolutely. And so we even did a whole separate podcast on this issue for some of you listeners that have been with us for a while, you might remember. So we're not going to really delve into much detail here. But if that is an issue for you, we want to encourage you to go back and listen to that podcast, which is number 21 mm-hmm. on hair loss.
Mm-hmm. Also, Coach, I actually wrote an ebook on this subject, which explains it in great detail if you want to check it out.
Yes.
And it's appropriately called Hair Loss in Women, and you can find it on Amazon or wherever you get your ebooks.
Excellent. And so the countdown continues to number 5, which is insomnia. And this is a huge, huge problem. Approximately 60 million Americans suffer from insomnia. And then this really contributes to fatigue, depression, obesity, high blood pressure, autoimmune disease, fibromyalgia, headaches, low libido, increased risk of diabetes. There's also connections between insomnia and then car accidents, industrial accidents, job loss, failed marriages. There's huge repercussions for not getting appropriate sleep.
Yeah, Coach, sleep is so fundamental to good health. Sometimes I make up nicknames for things, but I have two nicknames actually for sleep. One is called the linchpin, because if you imagine we have this camper trailer and you have to put this linchpin in. If the linchpin's not there, the trailer falls off.
Right.
But same thing with sleep. If you don't have good sleep, everything falls off.
Right.
As far as your health. I mean, it affects heart health, brain health, you name it. But I also call it the magic elixir, because if you can get these people sleeping, then often so many of their other problems, like the fatigue or the brain fog or whatever, would just go away.
Right. And unfortunately, there's no simple solution mm-hmm. when it comes to sleep, which we did a separate podcast on it, focusing more on the cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, CBTI, which is podcast number 24. So definitely go check that out, listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Coach, we'll hit a few high points when it comes to sleep. And to me, it starts with placing a high value on getting a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. For so many people, and I used to be one of them, when I was a younger man, I used to try to kind of cheat sleep. I thought if I got less sleep, I could be more productive. It's kind of interesting. If you look at people like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, they used to brag about they could get by on 5 hours of sleep per night. But interestingly, they both died of dementia. I'm just saying, mm-hmm. Coach, I think there might be a connection.
Yeah, that's interesting. So another really important step for getting good sleep is just basic sleep hygiene. And we've got an excellent handout, Dr. McMahon, that you made on that, getting a good night's sleep. And so we'll put that document in the show notes for you listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Coach, for women, the hormones could be a major factor. Progesterone tends to help you get to sleep. And then estrogen is more of a, what I call a sleep maintenance hormone. Mm-hmm. So that's why women in the perimenopausal and menopausal years often struggle with insomnia. So optimizing hormone balance with bioidentical hormones can be extremely helpful for these women. I've witnessed this thousands of times.
Yes, and I can personally attest you helped my mother with that issue,
Dr.
Oh,
isn't that nice?
I know she's forever, eternally grateful.
Well, you have one of the nicest mothers ever in the world, Lindsay. I've had the pleasure of...
I won't disagree on that. I am very blessed. Yeah. But there's also supplements out there that can be really helpful for insomnia. Of course, the most often cited is going to be your melatonin. Valerian can also be useful, and there's many others too. But what works for one person may not work for another, and so it might be just kind of worth trying several of them out or even considering combinations. Sometimes you have to layer those a little bit, mm-hmm. and there's some great combo products out there too.
Yeah, and the relaxation response techniques can be really helpful, such as meditation, neurofeedback, biofeedback. All these can be very helpful. There are lots of great apps out there. You taught me about a couple of them, Lindsay. I think you taught me about Calm and Insight Timer,
Calm.
And I've tried them both. And so they're available, and they can be very helpful for you. And finally, there are sleep medications. These can be very helpful for the right patient, and they should be reserved only for those who do not respond to the more conservative approaches. Many of these meds can be habit-forming, and some of them actually alter what we call sleep architecture. So what happens is you might sleep for 8 hours, but you don't get enough REM restorative sleep. Mm-hmm. So in long term, that can have some definite downside effects. And some of them actually can be quite habit-forming, such as the benzodiazepines, such as Klonopin, and they can actually increase your risk of dementia. So I try to stay away from these if I can and try to focus on those other things that we talked about.
Right. And, you know, of course, there's some people out there that it's worth considering a sleep study for, which can either occur in a sleep lab or it could even be done in your home. There's some companies out there that can do that. It's not just about the quantity, how many hours you're getting where you're laying in bed, but actually the quality of your sleep, to your point, Dr. McMahon, that sleep architecture. So treating sleep apnea if present can also be helpful. And, you know, I think another really important one that we're running into, too, is just the light exposure, the blue light mm-hmm. issue, mm-hmm. Where you can get a lot of different blue light blocking tools, too. Or just, you know, we're on our cell phones all the way up to the last minute before we get into bed.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And I think that stimulation / that blue light can really affect your own body's natural melatonin production. So,
Yeah, I had a guy just last week, Lindsay. It's kind of interesting. He came in, and one of his big complaints was a GI bleed. Okay, so as a functional doctor, I'm always asking, you know, why? Well, okay, why he got the GI bleed?
Right.
Well, the reason was that he was on Eliquis, which is a blood thinner. Well, okay, let's keep digging. Why are you on Eliquis? He had a kind of a mini stroke. Mm. Well, why do you have a mini stroke? Because he had AFib. Well, why does he have AFib? Because he had sleep apnea, which he was never treated. Right.
Whoa.
His doctor recognized it, but he refused to wear his mask. And there's a huge association with sleep apnea and AFib. So it's kind of interesting. So, you know, once again, that functional approach of just keep asking why, keep digging.
Wow.
And so sometimes I told him, and I've said this before on the podcast, my wonderful wife had taught me a long time ago, one of my core lessons,
yes.
A dog can have ticks and fleas. So I said, it could be that you just happen to have all these separate things going on. You happen to have a GI bleed and AFib and stroke and all this other stuff at the same time, right? Ticks and fleas.
Right.
Or there could be a common denominator, right? Mm. And his common denominator was sleep. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So So anyway, at the end of the day, though, when it comes to sleep, my motto is whatever it takes, because I think you just got to stay after it. And restorative sleep is just so fundamental to healing and treating disease and optimizing health. So I'm very aggressive with sleep.
Yes. Like you said, the linchpin.
Yes.
The linchpin. So moving on to number 4 of our top 10 concerns of women is going to be low libido.
Oh, my gosh.
So, unfortunately, this is one of those swept under the rug kind of things. It's difficult for patients sometimes to bring it up. It's difficult for providers even to talk about it. But then from a doctor point of view, sometimes they're taught very little about sexual health issues for women. So even when it is brought up in an appointment, sometimes it's hard to get helpful answers or solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at our clinic, we've tried to create what I call a sex-positive culture, where people can come in and feel comfortable bringing up these issues and having a conversation about them. And we've also tried to really work hard at creating customized solutions for our patients to help them achieve optimal sexual health outcomes.
Right. Healthy sexuality it's a birthright, really. It's important for our mental health, emotional health, spiritual health. It's important for each of us individually, and then it's really important in your relationship and marriage. So there's no reason to think that you have to give up this part of your life either when you get older. We have many women in our practice who are having the best sex of their life well into their 70s and 80s. It's remarkable.
It really is. It's a beautiful thing to see, Lindsay. I think some of these women, when they were in their 20s, they never could have imagined that they had such a good sex life into their 70s. So it's kind of cool to see that. It's interesting, Lindsay, the statistics tell a grim story. About a third of American women report having no interest in sex. Oh my gosh, isn't that something? And I hear it all the time from my patients, Lindsay. And about the 113 million Americans are living with DINS, D-I-N-S. Lindsay, you know what that is?
Yes, it's dual income, no sex.
Oh my gosh, that's right, Coach. In our fast-paced, high-pressured, kid-centric, two-working parent households, our relationships, and especially our intimacy, often takes a back seat.
And, you know, Dr. McMahon, it certainly does take two to tango. So women can be unfairly stereotyped as being sex refusers, but in many instances, it can be the partner who's avoiding it.
Yeah, I hear that all the time as well, Lindsay. But when this issue comes up in our practice, and we usually ask about it proactively, I've got this thing called a pyramid of wellness, and I kind of march through it with most of my patients, you know, nutrition, hydration, exercise, and there's this little box called intimacy, and that gives me the opportunity to sort of ask, you know, how's it going? And so that often gets a discussion going when women otherwise would be reluctant or embarrassed to bring it up on their own. Right. So, we try to bring it up. There are four areas of concerns that we explore. The first thing I asked about is there pain with intercourse? And for so many women, oh my gosh, the sex hurts and it's a deal breaker. And sometimes, you know, there's so much atrophy, there's ripping and tearing and bleeding, and it's just not fair to these women. And who wants to have sex if it hurts every time, right? The good news is that issue is usually correctable. My observation over the years is that the medical profession, and I'm sorry, y'all, I got to say it, we shamefully ignore women's vaginal health. We attend to their heart health, their brain health, or whatever, but we ignore their vaginal health. We do their pap smears every year, and we often needlessly let them go down this path to vaginal dryness and atrophy and pain with intercourse and all this kind of stuff, and it's just not necessary. And ultimately, it can lead to leakage and increased urinary tract infections and other serious issues. I'm thinking, Coach, we should do a separate podcast someday on just overall vaginal health, looking at the dryness issues and looking at things like the vaginal microbiome and stuff like that. I would not approach it from the point of view, I'm not a GYN doctor, y'all, and I will admit that. But I think that so many women come to see me with they're flip-flopping from bacterial vaginosis to yeast infections. Mm-hmm. They're having the dryness, pain with intercourse. And I think those are the kind of things that are in my wheelhouse that we deal with a lot. Yeah.
Right. And I know a lot of times when we're getting into a lot of these issues, particularly the pain with intercourse, referrals out for pelvic floor therapy can be magical. And that's just almost even a little known, like, did you know you could have that?
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful tool in this functional toolbox.
And why don't we refer more people to that? And, yes. of course, we did a whole podcast with my beloved yes. Nikki Woods. It was a great yes. podcast with Nikki. And I think, you know, every woman who has a vaginal birth should go for pelvic floor therapy. But her stuff that she does in combination with the stuff I do
yes.
is just a magical combination.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So once we do address that issue of pain with intercourse, then there's three other areas that we have to delve into after that, which includes interest, arousal, and then the orgasm itself. So some women have greater interest, but they can't achieve orgasm, while more commonly women that have low interest, they can be orgasmic when they get around to it. So it could be any kind of combination of those things, but it's not uncommon even for it to be across all three areas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, Coach, the most common cause of low interest is low energy. Think about it, Coach. She wakes up early in the morning to get the kids up, get breakfast on the table. She gets the kids off to school. She goes to work all day to a high-pressure job. She picks up the kids on the way home from work, and she has to stop by the grocery store, and she has to go pick up Johnny from football practice and Susie from soccer practice. Then she has to get supper on the table, clean up, do the dishes, do the homework for the kids, and then she finally gets to do a load of laundry, fold the clothes, and this is her routine day after day after day. Oh my gosh, Coach, I'm exhausted just thinking about it. So anyway, she has every right to be tired at the end of the day and to be uninterested in sex. And this is the last thing on her mind. She just wants to go to bed, get some rest, and get ready for a new day. She may be especially uninterested in sex if her partner has been watching the ball game and drinking beer all evening and not lifting a finger to help her around the house. You know, Coach, my wife says I'm the sexiest when I'm washing dishes.
That's right,
or mopping the floor.
Oh, my gosh. You know, in fact, just this past week, I got a text on my thread with my girlfriends from college, and one of them had a picture of her husband on her hands and knees, on his hands and knees vacuuming underneath the couch pulling the couch out. And she said, sexy. Man alive, you know, and all the rest of us chimed in. We're like, oh yeah, get some. So it
great.
Really does. That turns us on for sure. So,
yeah.
But like you said, Dr. McMahon, kind of going back, once we optimize vaginal health for these women, take away pain with intercourse, get their energy and mojo back, optimize hormones with some bioidentical hormones, it can be really impactful to these issues. So, and in the case of hormones, we got to give a shout out to testosterone. So studies have shown that for women who are low in testosterone, replacement therapy, replacement therapy can often result in better interest, arousal, and orgasm. So we've witnessed this beneficial effect for many of our patients.
Absolutely, yeah. And there are lots of ways you can give testosterone, you know, the creams, gels, shots, pellets, just so many things you could do. Depending on the woman, we try to optimize the program for her, make it simple and cost-effective as we can. But anyway, Coach, to be clear, there are many aspects of intimacy.
Right.
And yes, hormones can help, and they're very important. However, at the end of the day, it's about a lot of things, including relationships, communication, emotions, values, body image issues, and making intimacy a priority in our lives.
Yes, absolutely. And one more thing worth noting on this topic is that so many women are on birth control pills or antidepressants, and both of those meds, just something for women out there to be aware of, can commonly squelch libido, both interest and orgasm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, one last thing on libido, Coach. It's worth noting that libido is what I call a spectrum issue.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is unique and different. On a scale of 1 to 10, some women have high libido and some women have low libido, and it's all normal. It's really all about, are you where you want to be on the curve? If you're low and you're satisfied with that in your current circumstances, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with you. You're completely normal. You're not sexually defective in any way. However, if you're low libido and you want to be further up the curve, that's when we need to kick in and help you out and kind of explore these options that can help you achieve your goal. We hope to circle back around to this issue as well someday and do a separate a podcast on the issue of healthy sexuality.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, one more thing, Coach. There's a really nice book about this called Come As You Are, about libido and how it's unique to each person and kind of a spectrum issue. And I shamefully admit the author's name, but I'll throw out the name of the book. It's really quite good, Come As You Are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. So then we'll move on back to our countdown. We're actually down to number three. So the third most common complaint that we hear from our female patients is the issue of hot flashes and night sweats. And so by far the number one cause to this problem is hormonal decline, estrogen being the main culprit. There are certainly some non-hormonal therapies that one can try. Dietary changes can really help too. And in fact, there was a recent study that showed an 84% wow, reduction in hot flashes with the changes just in diet, no drugs involved. So we'll try to include that in the study notes because I think that's pretty fascinating.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I think nutrition and diet is the most important tool in our toolbox. And again, go back to our last podcast on functional nutrition. So, but other things, Coach, exercise, stress management, caffeine reduction, hydration, certain nutraceuticals can also be helpful, such as vitamin E, B-complex, Don Quai, black cohosh, Vitex, ginseng, evening primrose oil, and maca can all be helpful.
I love that maca.
Do you? Okay, great.
But also, this would not be a first-line treatment, but in full interest of full disclosure, there's certain drugs, too, that can help with hot flashes. So Neurontin being a nerve drug, Clonidine as a blood pressure drug, Oxybutynin, a bladder spasm drug, and then certain antidepressants like Effexor, Celexa, and Paxil could all be tools in the toolbox here.
Yeah, and I mentioned those because it's important to kind of round out the toolbox, but quite frankly, I hardly ever use those. I think the vast majority of women can be helped without drugs in as far as that's concerned. The second most common cause of concern that we hear from our patients is weight gain or trouble losing weight. At last count, about 65% of Americans are overweight and about 30% are outright obese. And it's getting worse, Coach. In the last 30 years, obesity has doubled in adults and tripled in children. Oh, my gosh, Coach, I feel so sorry for our children growing up in this world that they are. But the obesity epidemic contributes to approximately $120 billion to the healthcare costs in America.
And obesity has become the number one cause of preventable death in America. And not to mention all the list of complications of obesity that could go on and on, like high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, increased cancer rates, not to mention poor self-esteem. Women just don't like the way they look and feel when we are not the weight that we want to be.
Yeah, you know, Coach, the more I study this issue, the more confusing it gets. It seems like the science on obesity continues to evolve. And at this point, we still really don't have a great handle on it. I don't have all the answers. It seems like writing a book on weight loss can make you a lot of money. So everybody's writing a book. All the would-be experts have an opinion on this matter. And you got the blood type diet. You got the bright light eating diet. You got the eat fat, get thin diet. You got the Atkins diet, the flexitarian diet. You've even got Weight Watchers, Optavia, Jenny Craig, Nutrisystems, and Noom. Even the big boys are getting in on the act. The Mayo Clinic diet and weight loss program is out there. So all of these have their own spin on the matter, but in my opinion, none of them have the answer that fits everybody.
Right. And then at the end of the day, it makes you, leaves you with this feeling of it's not fair.
Yeah, that's right.
Where two people can eat the exact same thing, get the same exercise, and then one person over here can be overweight and the other person stays really thin. So it can be really frustrating for those who struggle with weight, even to the point of just being devastating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know, I hear it all the time, Coach. Quote, "Doctor, I eat like a bird. I exercise 5 days a week. I simply cannot lose weight."
Right.
End quote. That's what I hear,
right.
Coach.
Yeah.
I had a patient who told me that one time. It was a guy, and his wife was there with him. And she said, no, go look in the backseat of his car. It's full of candy wrappers.
So sometimes we're not being honest.
Yeah, that's right. So I think some of these people are leveling with us and others maybe are deluding themselves and not completely honest with us as far as exactly what they're eating.
And so there are many factors that can influence weight, but we've got to start with just the basics, which is diet and exercise. But Dr. McMahon, even those really simple basics are controversial.
Aren't they? Yeah, absolutely.
So if we could just summarize the best diet for weight management, it would require two words, which would be whole foods. I think that processed foods and all of the inherent badness that comes along with that is a major factor in the obesity epidemic. Now, whether you eat a whole food plant-centered diet or whole food meat or whole food fat-centered diet, it's up for debate. So perhaps that just depends on the patient, Dr. McMinn.
Yeah, I think so. So the evidence suggests that probably diet's number one. I think exercise is important, but probably not as important as the diet. But, you know, as I think back on it, Lindsay, I don't ever recall in my life seeing an obese marathon runner. You know, I'm just saying. So I think exercise does matter. I think the type of exercise you get also matters. I see some women, for instance, with a PCOS body type, you know, they're very strong, lots of muscle mass, and they're seeing a trainer, and they have them doing a lot of things like squats. And these women just bulk up. They get bigger, and they're very quick to pack on muscle mass, which then increases weight and bulk, and it's just not what they want. So I think you got to really tailor the kind of exercise to the patient's body type.
Right, right. And so then moving beyond those big the two biggies, diet and exercise, there's many factors like stress, medications, the whole gut microbiome, toxins, inflammation, insulin, metabolism, thyroid optimization, then estrogen dominance, and many others. It's just too many items even here to list. But there also seems to be even a genetic component to this whole issue.
Yep. Now, Coach, we do not claim to be a weight loss clinic. However, it comes up all the time, and I do my best to address the issue. I try to address the two big issues that we've just talked about above. But many women can be very successful with just dealing with diet and exercise, while others struggle. So it's frustrating to them and to me. I wish I had a simple one-size-fits-all answer for you on this important issue, but it is difficult, and it has to be very personalized and customized for you. I found that if you really get after it with a good customized program and that builds in accountability, then it can often be successful. And I guess we'll just leave the weight loss issue at that.
And down to our final one, Dr. McMinn, drumroll again.
Number one.
The most common complaint that we hear from our female patients is low energy.
By far.
Or fatigue. Mm-hmm. So in our society, this is a complaint of epidemic proportions. So on a scale of 1 to 10, low energy can be anywhere on that range. It could be mild, or as in many of our patients, it could be life-changing. It could be so significant in their lives. So some of these folks can hardly get out of bed, much less go to work or consider taking care of their families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must admit, Coach, that doctors learn very little about treating fatigue in medical school. There's no course on fatigue, no elective on fatigue, no lecture on fatigue, no textbook on fatigue, and nobody really wants to own this. There's no fatigueologist out there.
Right.
These patients take a lot of time. It's time that doctors just don't have, and most doctors really don't have the tools in a toolbox to deal with this. Usually they'll do a few tests, and the labs come back normal, and so they tell the patient there's nothing wrong with them because their labs are normal.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's the last thing that these desperate patients want to hear. They know that there's something wrong with them. They're exhausted. They can hardly get through their day, and it's just not normal. And these people need to be validated, not dismissed.
Mm-hmm. And then Dr. McMinn, fatigue has many friends, like brain fog, fibromyalgia, weight gain, low libido, gut problems, just to name a few.
Yeah, and so when you take a functional approach, Lindsay, that is, you know, why do people get fatigued? The list just goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And many patients have multiple contributing factors. So it takes a detailed history and some serious detective work sometimes to get to the bottom of this issue and help these people get to feeling better.
But the good news is that it's generally a very treatable disease. And in our experience, the vast majority of these people can get on a customized program and find their way to better energy. It's like turning a ship around in the water, though, Dr. McMinn. It can take a while.
So you got to be patient. Some people, it's kind of interesting, Lizzie. Within a few weeks, you'll see a turnaround. Others, maybe like 3 months or so. So you got to be patient. And of course, if plan A doesn't work, you got to go to plan B and keep tweaking the program till you get better. But we did a whole podcast on fatigue, and so we won't repeat ourselves as far as the treatment protocol. But if you want to go back and check that out, that's podcast number 2. However, I will say that energy is the key to life. If you don't have energy, it affects everything. With major fatigue, you can't be the person you want to be, the spouse you want to be, the parent you want to be, or the employee you want to be. It's a big deal. And the good news, once again, is that it's usually a treatable disease. as Coach says, it does take a while, and you have to be patient, but stick with the program. Mm-hmm. But there is genuine, real hope for a brighter future when it comes to fatigue.
So there you have it, listeners, the top 10 concerns of women. And let's give them a bonus.
Okay, there you go. There are just two little honorable mention concerns I'll throw out there for you. And those are
going to be stress and osteoporosis.
Yeah, Coach, stress is huge in our society, and we did a podcast on that. Check out number 11 for more information on that.
And then osteoporosis is a very important and undervalued issue for women's health. And so a broken hip can be a game changer for many women. So check out that podcast number 20 for more information on that issue.
Now, we hope that you have none of these concerns. However, if you're like most women, some of these issues might relate to you and be a part of your future. So the take-home message is that there are real solutions for these problems. Sometimes you or your provider have to think outside the traditional medical box to find these solutions. But in most instances, these solutions are there for you for a brighter future. Remember, our goal is always optimization. We strive to help you be the very best version of yourself in mind, body, and spirit.
And that'll about do it for this episode of the Functional Medicine Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope that we are able to share something here that was helpful for you.
And don't forget to check us out at functionalmedicinepodcast.com and mcminnclinic.com. And help us grow the podcast by telling your friends and family about us. And remember, we'll probably have a couple of things posted on Functional Medicine Podcast that we mentioned earlier, like, for instance, the sleep hygiene handout.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And also, quick shout out to Ben Wedland, our recording engineer behind the scenes. Ben, thank you.
So, Coach, send us out on a Coach Lindsay pearl of wisdom.
Thanks, Dr.
I love these pearls of wisdom, Lindsay. I learn something from them every time.
Well, you know, I'm going to pull from just this last bit where we were talking about the fatigue, but we were talking about the time issue, that these things take time. Yeah. And, you know, I think we have this expectation of, I've been eating really good for a week.
Yeah,
surely,
we'll
have lost 20 pounds a week, you know, or just any one of these issues. It just takes time. And I heard once when just with some reading that you can compare when we're taking this functional root cause approach, it just takes time. So kind of like hair growth. So you might not notice that your hair is growing in a week or even in 2 weeks, but gosh, 2 months later, I need a haircut, you know? And so I think we just have to approach this with patience and diligence. We are looking to reverse issues that have been building for a long time underneath the surface that we didn't know about. But the encouraging thing is when you address one of these things from a functional medicine approach, sometimes it has this ripple effect of fixing and correcting a lot of other issues in our life.
That's right. That's right. Well, that should wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening. This is Dr. McMinn.
And this is Coach Lindsay.
Take care and be well.